they got it all wrong. We're not a sexual act per se. There's something else that we're doing in society that allows us to remain generation after generation after generation. And the radical fairies were called together for us to begin talking about deepening and broadening what gay liberation was all about.
We cast a sacred circle in fairy love. We cast a sacred circle.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. China stands firm against marriage equality. The Palestinian Authority bans pro-queer gatherings. And radical gay men believe in fairies. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 24th, 2019. A spokesman for the Parliament of the People's Republic of China said this week that lawmakers have no intention of changing the country's marriage laws to include same-gender couples. Zhang Tiwei told reporters during an August 21st news briefing that this rule suits our country's national condition and historical and cultural traditions. He also correctly pointed out that the vast majority of countries in the world do not recognize the legalization of same-sex marriage. The Republic of China, or Taiwan, opened the civil institution to gay and lesbian couples 3 months ago. Since then, mainland Chinese officials have had to address the issue. Private consensual adult same-gender sex is not against the law there, but LGBTQ people have no specified legal rights. Homosexuality remains a generally taboo subject, especially outside the major cities of the world's most populous country. Parts of the revised civil code governing heterosexual-only marriage are expected to become law in 2020.
Serbia's government has banned lesbians and gay men from accessing artificial insemination services. Anyone who has had homosexual relations during the past 5 years is now prohibited from donating eggs or sperm for insemination purposes. Health Minister Zlatibor Lončar apparently announced the policy in March, but it only came to light this week in a Radio Free Europe report. The policy was unveiled a month after the partner of Serbian Prime Minister Ana Brnabic gave birth to a baby boy. Brnabic's partner, Milica Djurdjic, reportedly received in vitro fertilization abroad. Even so, if any queer couple gets medical services abroad, only the biological mother is recognized by Serbia as the legal parent. Serbia's revised 2006 constitution specifically defines civil marriage as a union between one man and one woman. Cynics say that Brnabic's mentor, President Aleksandar Vučić, only elevated her to prime minister to bolster Serbia's entry into the European Union. Brnabic herself has been criticized for failing to advance any LGBTQ rights measures since her tenure began in June 2017. Activists complain that the PM has the financial means to add to her family and a position of power that protects her from the problems faced by most Serbian LGBTQ people. Several non-governmental organizations have filed a formal challenge to the new policy. They say it's a violation of the Constitution and the country's anti-discrimination laws.
The Palestinian Authority has banned all queer supportive events in the West Bank. It's a response to a mid-August get-together in the city of Nablus, organized by the grassroots LGBTQ group Al-Kaz. Al-Kaz has operated since 2001 in both the West Bank and among Arab Israelis. Its goals include building LGBTQ communities and promoting new ideas about the role of gender and sexual diversity in political activism, civil society, institutions, media, and everyday life. Palestinian Authority police spokesman Colonel Louay Erzikat told reporters that police only learned about the Nablus gathering soon after it was over. He accused Alkaz of working to create discord and harm civil peace, and said that their activities are harmful to higher values and ideals of Palestinian society. Erzincan asked members of the public to report any suspiciously queer activities. Ahmoud Khab of the Independent Commission for Human Rights charged the police with essentially approving vigilante action. According to the New York Times, Alkaz called off a similar gathering in Ramallah after threats of violence spread on social media. Alkaz issued a statement condemning the police ban on its events and defiantly vowed to continue its work. The statement read, "We believe that the police and Palestinian society at large should focus on combating the occupation and other forms of violence that tear apart the sensitive fabric of our society and values, instead of prosecuting activists who work tirelessly to end all forms of violence."
Brazil's proudly homophobic president, Jair Bolsonaro, has now made it impossible for LGBTQ filmmakers to get government financing for their work. The national film agency, ANSINA, had approved state funding for a TV series about the life of gay black men in Brasilia, the nation's capital. Afronte is written and directed by Bruno Victor and Marcus Azevedo. Bolsonaro stepped in, ordering ANSINA to withdraw its financial support for the project. During a Facebook Live appearance last week, the president specifically criticized Afronte and three other queer-themed proposals with unacceptable gender diversity and sexuality. Bolsonaro threatened to shut down ANSINA in July if it failed to apply government-backed filters to the projects it invests in. He called funding LGBTQ-themed projects throwing money away and demanded that the agency only support projects that reflect family values. ANSINA has a budget equivalent to nearly $17.5 million. Bolsonaro's interference has temporarily suspended any further funding awards, even though only a few include queer themes or content. Variety reports that the Bolsonaro administration plans to review the criteria and guidelines for the application of resources during the next 6 months. Bruno and Acevedo were set to receive the equivalent of $99,000 for their 5-episode Afronte TV series. The other three Bolsonaro-targeted queer-themed projects were only in the application stage. The University of Sao Paulo says that about 70% of all films produced in Brazil depend on public funding. The country's Association of Independent Audiovisual Producers issued a statement condemning the Bolsonaro intervention. It said, "It is not up to anyone, especially the president of a democratic republic, to censor art, audiovisual projects, and films." A group of queer Brazilian filmmakers is reportedly planning to file a legal challenge to the new policy. Bolsonaro has been dubbed the Donald Trump of the tropics. He turned heads again this week by claiming that the horrendous fires engulfing the eco-critical Amazon rainforests were actually started by his political opponents to make him look bad.
In this week's installment of What Has the Real Donald Trump Done Now?, the U.S. Department of Justice filed a right-wing-backed anti-queer brief with the Supreme Court this week. It argues that federal law does not and should not protect trans people from losing their jobs for expressing their gender identity. The filing comes ahead of high court hearings scheduled for October addressing three LGBTQ workplace bias cases. One of them involves a transgender plaintiff, and the other two deal with sexual orientation. The central question is whether Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that outlaws bias based on sex, extends to gender identity or expression and sexual orientation. The Justice Department filing contends that Congress never intended Title VII to protect LGBTQ people from hiring bias when it passed the landmark legislation 55 years ago. The brief also notes the failure of Congress thus far to pass specific legislation protecting LGBTQ people from discrimination under federal law. The Equality Act would do that for the workplace and other areas of life. It passed in the current session of the Democratic Party-controlled U.S. House. However, it would be a shocker if Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell allowed so much as a debate on the measure in his chamber. especially since the advent of marriage equality, a depressing majority of people in the U.S. mistakenly believe that federal law already protects LGBTQ people from discrimination.
Finally, at least one board member resigned and several prominent members quit the Log Cabin Republicans this week, following the organization's unexpectedly early endorsement of Donald Trump for re-election. The queer political group did not endorse Trump in the 2016 election. The group's leadership now praises what they called Trump's bold actions that benefit the LGBTQ community in an August 6th opinion piece in the Washington Post. This despite several annoying facts to the contrary. Former D.C. Log Cabin Republicans chair Robert Turner explained his resignation on Facebook, calling the national leadership's hollow WAPO op-ed a step too far. Board member and former New Hampshire State Republican Party chair Jennifer Horn also tendered her resignation. Horn told Slate that there is no world where I can explain to my children that I just endorsed Donald Trump for president. The Log Cabin Republicans' only out transgender Republican official, Jordan Evans, announced their resignation in the pages of The Advocate, charging that the Trump endorsement ignores the reality of what it means to be queer in our current political climate. That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending August 24th, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm John Dyer V.
We felt that there was a need for something in the movement at that time that deepened our understanding of gay consciousness and gay spirituality.
Fairy fathers later in the program. But what about that other word?
The word gay, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Possibly the first published appearance of the word gay, as related to a same-sex relationship, appeared in a passage from Gertrude Stein's Miss Fur and Miss Skeen, published in 1922. Here, Stein writes about a lesbian couple, Maud Hunt Squire and Ethel Mars, who met at the Cincinnati Art Academy in the 1890s. Both were artists in their own right, and had visited Stein and her partner Alice B. Toklas at their salon in Paris. In the piece, Stein manages to use the word gay in almost every sentence. In part, it reads, "They stayed there and were gay there. Not very gay there, just gay there. They were both gay there. They were regularly working there. Both of them cultivating their voices there. They were both gay there." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Isn't life beautiful? Isn't life gay? Isn't life the perfect thing to pass the time away?
Hello, I'm Robbie Kaplan, the author of Then Comes Marriage, United States v. Windsor and the Defeat of DOMA. And you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
I do believe in fairies! I do believe in fairies!
Is there something more than sexual about the orientation of gay men? 40 years ago this week, a couple of the movement's male mavens called the gathering of their brothers to a remote desert location to figure out just why fairies are born and what makes them radical. This by Out correspondent Charlie Lang spoke with Don Kilhefner and the late Mark Thompson in August 2009 about the beginnings of the radical fairies.
We cast a sacred circle in fairy love. We cast a sacred circle in fairy love. We cast a sacred circle in fairy love. We cast a sacred circle.
So, Don, how did the Radical Fairies come into being?
Back in 1978, Harry Hay and I met out in San Juan Pueblo, New Mexico, where he was living. And both of us were concerned about the direction that the gay liberation movement was taking. It was becoming more bourgeois. It was becoming more conventional politics. It was becoming more gay assimilationist. And we felt that there was a need for something in the movement at that time that deepened our understanding of gay consciousness and gay spirituality. And so the Radical Fairies came out of that kind of understanding.
I noticed on the poster from the original gathering that it was called, actually, a spiritual conference. Can you speak a little bit more to the aspect of spirituality?
Well, both Harry and I felt strongly that one of the things that was missing from the movement at that time was an understanding of the purpose of gay people. Why are there gay people? Do gay people carry a different consciousness than straight people do? And if that is true, which I think it is, and Harry thought it was, what is our contribution to society from that place of gay spirit, gay consciousness? And so that was woven right into the conference. The subtitle of the conference was, What is the Gay Dimension of Spirituality? What is the Spiritual Dimension of Being Gay?
Any answers to those questions?
Well, Harry has come up with his understanding of what he calls subject-subject consciousness, that one of the ways that we differ from straight people is that we carry a subject-subject consciousness, same with same, while heterosexual carry a subject-object consciousness. And therefore, the way we walk in the world, the way we manifest ourselves in the world will be different. Walt Whitman also came up with there's a difference between gay men that he called adhesive and straight people, which he called amative. Edward Carpenter, an English socialist, one of the great pioneers of gay liberation, came up with the idea that gay people play certain kinds of social roles in society. Evolutionary biologists are telling us the same thing. E.O. Wilson at Harvard is saying gay people carry the rare altruistic impulse in our species, etc. So there's a lot of accumulating information that says they got it all wrong. We're not a sexual act, per se. There's something else that we're doing in society that allows us to remain generation after generation after generation. And the Radical Fairies were called together for us to begin talking about deepening and broadening what gay liberation was all about.
So I'm thinking 1979, long before the advent of online connections of any kind, how did you go about gathering these men at that time for the first conference?
Well, it was difficult, let me tell you. We had to find a place because we wanted a place where it would just be gay men. We didn't want anybody else around. And that's hard to find these days. And we finally ended up at a place out in the Sonora Desert of Arizona, east of Tucson, called the Sri Ram Ashram, run by a gay man. And Harry and I went out there, scouted it out, and said, yes, this is the place. It is isolated enough. The nearest neighbors were miles and miles away. It had a pool. It had a commercial kitchen. It had places where people could sleep. That was the place. Then we had to reach people.
Yeah.
And one of the ways we reached them, thank God for Mark Thompson, Mark came and did an interview with Harry, and during that interview talked about the gathering, and Mark's article kind of got that out to the rest of the world. And we then also did a historic leaflet, which also on one side talked about the gathering. On the other side kind of talked about the purpose of the gathering, why we're calling gay men together.
That place had scorpions too, Don.
And rattlesnakes.
And rattlesnakes.
They didn't tell you about that.
No.
Mark, at the time you were working at The Advocate,
yes,
correct?
I was just a young gay man living in San Francisco in 1979. I was 27 years old and had already been working for The Advocate for 4 years and was doing lots of cover articles. And I was aware of the writings of Edward Carpenter and Harry Hay from other sources. I felt that I've always been kind of on a spiritual seeker's path. And 1978 was important for a lot of reasons, because, of course, that was the year that Harvey Milk was, put into political office. And it seemed to be a benchmark for our community. On one level, it was. And on another level, it seemed like nothing was really happening. I mean, we were getting political gains, but I felt very deeply that we gay men were kind of in a stuck place spiritually, that we were still using each other and going about our business in familiar old ways, and that we needed a new approach. So when we had the opportunity to fly down and interview Harry. So I did this long interview with Harry about his ideas, these seminal ideas. And at the end of the article, I concluded with all of the information about how you could find this very remote place in the middle of the Arizona desert.
So can you give us a little bit of a context, like how many men showed up and from where?
About 150 gay men showed up.
Wow.
And the great thing was they came from all over North America. Every city was represented. Mm-hmm. Toronto, Vancouver, San Francisco, New Orleans, Miami. And there were two or three ferries from each one of these places. And after the gathering was over, they went back and seeded ferry gatherings in their own cities. So very quickly, the radical ferries became a decentralized kind of operation, with ferry gatherings happening almost everywhere.
And at the conference, was there a structure per se, or was it kind of made up as you went along?
It was both structured and unstructured. We wanted to, each day had a structure to it. It began with a great ferry circle where we all got together and talked and shared. And then throughout the different days, there were different things that people wanted to do. Somebody wanted to do a workshop on tantric spirituality, gay tantric spirituality. Somebody else wanted to do something on erotic massage around the pool. Somebody wanted to do, and so people brought their gifts to this gathering, and all of those gifts were woven in to the fabric of what the gathering became. Each day also had a focus to it. And by the end of the gathering, there was a great circle called, and a ritual in that great circle, which was created by the people who were at the gathering. It was not predetermined, but people wove that ceremony together. So it was a very deep, powerful gathering of gay men, where the creativity created the gathering. There was a structure. Yeah. But it was a loose structure.
I'll never, ever forget that last gathering, because there we were in the moonlight doing our evocations to the four spirits and to the sky and to the Mother Earth and to each other. And all of a sudden, on the outskirts of the circle, we could see this enormous horned bull just appear as if out of nowhere.
Wow.
And it just standing there, just looking at us, and then just kind of disappearing. Things like this happened all the time. And don't forget the famous mud ritual that happened on the second day. I think it was John Burnside, Harry Hayes' partner, and others said, well, all this talk and everything is fine, but we've got all this reddish earth, you know. So they found like a little gully not far from the encampment and did a bucket brigade and made this enormous pit of this beautiful, silky mud. And everyone just stripped and adorned themselves with the mud, put bits of chaparral in their hair, and just did this big clump of a muddy gay man. It was a sight to behold.
It really was.
This is Charlie Lang. I'm speaking with Don Kilhefner and Mark Thompson about the Radical Fairies. So, Don, have these gatherings continued to occur consistently?
Continue to occur around the world.
Around the world.
All over the United States. There are Euro fairies that meet several places several times a year. A residential fairy sanctuary just opened in eastern France.
A residential fairy sanctuary. So it's not just like a weekend fairy gathering. This is a facility where
fairies... A place where radical fairies live, farm the land, have a relationship to nature, invite people in for gatherings periodically. And it's a place where a core group of fairies live. And other fairies or other gay men who are in need of some loving care, loving kindness, just getting away from the rush of things, can go and stay a week, can stay a month, can stay a year.
Don, I'm wondering what relevance do the radical fairies hold for gay men today?
I think there are three major ways in which the radical fairies are relevant today. One of them is that they represent progressive politics. We have very little in the way of progressive politics, organized progressive politics in the gay community today. Radical fairies work to increase, to broaden political and social consciousness in our community, supporting liberation movements of women and men, people of color, working people, ordinary people like us, support political candidates that have some kind of integrity and ethics to them, so that we're involved in progressive politics. Radical fairies are relevant today because it focuses on gay-centered consciousness. It focuses on those questions of who are we? Not the assimilation into the mainstream, but why are there gay people here? Why haven't gay people gone down the drainpipe of history? What are we contributing to society? So that kind of exploration, which I think young people are hungry for, particularly after the decades of empty calories of right-wing assimilationist politics in our community. And I think a third way that's relevant today is around community building. The Radical Fairies put a great deal of emphasis on creating community, healthy community, community in which we can be openly gay, community in which we honor ancestors, requires elders. There are adults and youth working together, a community that has consciousness around the environment, a community that conducts ceremonies and rituals that keeps our community sane and healthy. Those are all questions that I think young people are hungry for today. So I think what we're going to see is a wave of radical fairy consciousness Fantastic. Coming into the community. The reality is gay liberation is a revolutionary movement. It wasn't a middle-class law reform movement. It was a revolutionary movement based on liberation. We liberate ourselves. We're not asking for emancipation. We liberate ourselves. And along with that liberation movement came a liberation consciousness, creating a community, creating a reality for us that makes sense to us, not fitting in to that larger community. And the radical fairies are the contemporary extension of that. It probably is the most vibrant grassroots gay effort in the world right now.
Well, and on that note, I want to thank you both for your rich conversation. This is Charlie Lang, and I've been speaking with Don Kilhefner and Mark Thompson about the wonderful radical fairy movement in the United States and around the world.
Dear friends, queer friends, let me tell you how I am feeling. You have given me such pleasure. I love you so. Dear friends, queer friends, let me tell you how I am feeling. You have given me such pleasure.
You can follow the continuing adventures of the Radical Fairies through several online sources, including radfae.org. That's RADFAE.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Tanya Kane Perry and John Dyer V, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Dustin Richardson, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Charlie Lang. Mason Williams performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Paul Bannon, Richard Merck, and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WWSX Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, KSPC Claremont, California, and a dazzling array of community radio stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Stay tuned.